Hello, everyone. You are listening to and watching the ITV STV Guinness Six Nations podcast with me, David Flatman, with him,
Tom Shanklin,
and with him,
Gareth Enscombe.
Well done.
All right, Gareth.
Well done.
Good.
So far, so good.
It's going all right, isn't it?
I feel like we should do a better introduction for Gareth. Formerly of Auckland and the Blues, the Chiefs, came across to the Cardiff Blues 2014. Mm-hmm. Many a good season there. Won the Challenge Cup last minute kick against Gloucester. And has now moved to the Ospreys, a current Welsh international, but slightly injured. How is your knee?
Good, thank you. It's slowly starting to make some progress now, which is nice after sort of frustrating 5 months, really. So I had a bit of a setback, and thankfully I think I'm sort of starting to turn a corner now and starting to lightly load the leg with some weights, and it seems to respond in pretty well to that. So it's getting there, but, you know, I think my target will probably be, you know, trying to be fit for the start of next season, I think will be my goal.
That's a long old injury. So you can load it up with weights. So obviously you walked in here nicely. You look athletic enough. Are you anywhere near running in a straight line yet, let alone moving off it?
No, I think that's still, I think I've got a good 2 months ahead of me of probably just weights and strengthening. You know, my legs aren't big at the best of times, so there's a bit of work needs to be done to get a bit of bulk there and a bit of stability, and then I think probably progressing into running, you know, probably around, I don't know, maybe end of March, April.
So you literally can't skip leg day now, can you? Because it's every day.
Lee Byrne gave the greatest advice ever: you don't see legs in a nightclub, do you?
It's very true.
It's so true.
Yeah.
No, you see, and then when you retire, like 20 years from now, you don't ever need to do legs again, except when you are. Basically, you retired, but you were a bit of a fatty like I was. Legs are all you've got. That's all I do. I just do calf raises now. That's all I got.
Johnny Drama would be proud of your calves,
yeah,
mate.
I wear shorts in tonight.
Very, very good. They're very
rolled
good.
Up shorts.
Yeah. Nice. Camo top, long sleeve, calves out.
Yeah. Me and Corey Allen, another like season long injury.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of upper body, and I think, you know, we've both put about 3 or 4 kilo just in the uppers. So, you know, you didn't mention that.
I think I
am looking big, aren't I?
I should apologise first as well for this. Thank you for coming on this podcast, but I should apologise because the influx of Twitter followers, of Instagram followers you're going to get is going to be huge.
I mean, can't wait.
We have literally made people.
I can't wait for the protein deal to come through with it, you know.
Any deal, mate. You'll get shorts deal. Shoe deal, better than what you got already.
Ever heard of Jamie Roberts? Created him. We've done some really good stuff. We've made some people.
There was
on this
a guy
podcast.
Called George North, and he was unknown.
He came on there,
and now look at him.
The young pup. Scott Quinnell said to us, "There's this young pup out west. Come and have a look at him." Got him on the pod. He's now got 178 caps.
Yeah, I mean, your life is going to change, mate.
So. What's your Twitter
maybe
handle?
Some followers with, you know, here might. Obviously here between you two. And
it's just nice not to have another egg in the shot. What's your Twitter handle?
Gareth _ Enscombe. Nice and basic. Straight to the point.
Easy.
Follow.
I noticed you're looking big up top. Lower limb injury is good for that. And when you walked in, you walk in and I think, oh yeah, good unit. Shanks instantly threatened.
Instantly. Did you see me puff out a bit?
Instantly. Yeah. Instantly. He changes. His arms come out a bit. His arms come out. Oh, I hurt my elbow when I was playing. That's worked out there.
Just speaking of training now, so you're injured at the moment. You're doing a lot of upper body. How often do you have to train? Because, you know, I've got this image of, you know, you're injured. You spend a lot of time just watching Netflix series, turning up for an hour, bit of rehab,
so
training.
Good. So
yeah,
good.
Just going to show your face, really. I'm still here, guys. The saviour's here.
Yeah,
he's just not ready yet.
particularly at the start, you know, all I was doing at the start was playing PlayStation, icing the leg, watching Netflix, and now, you know, it grows to going in for a couple of hours a day to get what you need, your treatment and your weights, and then you're sort of in and out, really. So in one way, you know, it's a chance to refresh and get away from the game, but I've probably passed that point now. I'm sort of sick of watching rugby and sick of watching boys. And so, you know, eventually when the time comes, you know, I really look forward to getting the ball in my hands.
I mean, I don't want to bring you down now, but if you look to last year, okay, and you look at the Six Nations, you know, you start in 10 all the way through apart from Italy, when obviously a lot of the big guys get rested for that. God, every game got rested for Italy.
You're rested for every game.
And you signed for the Ospreys there, and you injure yourself against England in the
first warm-up game.
Yep. I mean, how do you deal with that sort of mentally? Because the World Cup is sort of just around the corner for you. You're the number one 10. You know, you've got that jersey. I mean, what sort of mental issues, should I say, that do you have to deal with?
I think at first it was more shock. I think I'm the type of person that probably with anything like that, it takes me a while to sort of realize what's going on. And I think particularly with how my injury happened and the fact that I played on for a bit and, you know, speaking to the medical staff at halftime and at full time, we're all pretty hopeful, really. You know, we thought at worst, maybe like a slight meniscus tear, you know, we could manage that, you know, 6-7 weeks of the World Cup, it'd be okay. And, you know, within 24 hours, you know, we played on the Sunday, Monday had the scan Monday morning, you know, by about 1 o'clock, you know, it went from like a little tear to a couple of weeks to a little bit of a mid to long-term injury, well, middle injury that maybe I could maybe miss the first two World Cup games, take a punt and hopefully be fit,
yeah,
to suddenly, you know, a full ACL meniscus tear and, you know, best part of 12 months. So it all came out of the blue, and the fact that we didn't expect it probably was the most shocking thing, you know, and I suppose it took a while to adjust. And I found the hardest thing was probably watching the bigger games in the World Cup. You know, I think it was more the Australian game when, you know, Wales played really well and won the
cracking
first
game.
Yeah, it was. And I think, you know, they're the games as a rugby player you want to play in. And when you see the boys doing well, you think, you know, what if? And
yeah,
that was probably the hardest thing. It probably helped. I was afforded from the Ospreys, they allowed me to go on my honeymoon. So I actually watched the semi and the final in the Maldives and Dubai.
You didn't look at
the Could Fiji. Be worse.
Yeah. Well, there's worse places to watch.
You didn't
games,
watch the Fiji game, did you think, ooh, I really want to be part of that?
Yeah, to be fair. Yeah, I saw both 12. I didn't fancy that. So yeah, they probably saved me there.
It's cruelly ironic that we're doing this podcast beneath a picture of Rhys Patchell just up on the wall there. Obviously, you've got to pretend to like that guy normally, but do you hate that guy? Do you actually hate that guy? He's a really nice guy, isn't he? That's the worst bit.
Yeah, he is. Look, the thing I've found the most, particularly over the last 18 months in the Welsh environment, is how much the group's really probably bonded and formed a really good, I guess, friendship, really. And I think that's probably showed in the way the boys have played and the results. And I know from my relationship with, you know, all the teams with Biggs and Patch and Jared, you know, we all get along really well. And although we're all trying to scrap for the jersey, I think what I noticed is that, you know, the boys are willing to do anything they can to help the guy in the jersey. So, you know, there's no complaints.
So you don't not talk to him because he's ginger?
No, I forgive him for that.
Not many gingers now, is there?
There aren't, but no, not in
Rhys
top four.
He's, just, you know, he's got a good set of hair on it. It is thick, isn't it? You know, obviously yours was...
It's a weave.
The way down, but yeah, it is thick.
That's what stress does to you, mate.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, isn't it?
What are you stressed about?
Everything, mate. Life after rugby.
Yeah, yeah.
Grafting.
Nice.
What am I going to do next?
Yeah, and best
you're
of
right,
roles.
You're in a bubble at the moment.
Yeah.
Enjoy
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah.
I'm cherish it.
You wait 10 years, I'll come up with a podcast soon. I'll have to do something, won't I?
Obviously, like, we're joking about this, but you've obviously thought a little bit of life after rugby because you've got an app out. Is that right?
Do you want we've got, it's not quite ready.
Okay.
It's called FitApp, but it's basically like a...
it's called Magnum.
it's a search comparison site, really, for all things, you know, fitness, sports and wellbeing. My partner, Alex Cuthbert, another investor, and Dean Jones.
Business partner. Yeah.
And look, I think I through our experience through sport, you know, rugby, and we thought there was a potential gap in the market to sort of help facilitate people with their... fitness journeys, or get them started, or get them to carry on.
Got your first client, right there.
What are you looking at me?
Got your first client now.
It sounds interesting. I got a message on LinkedIn last week from a bloke called Gavin, and his biog is basically, it literally says, "I help ex rugby players lose 20 to 30 pounds in 8 weeks." I never reply to stuff like that straight away. Gav, here's my email address. Talk to me.
Yeah, well, hopefully on our site, you know, we'd have Gav on there and you could come see Gav and we'd facilitate that hopefully a lot easier for people. So,
do you have an app name, is it?
Yeah, it's FitApp, but it's not quite ready yet, so it's not able to be downloaded, but we'll have a website and an app. So look, we're not quite sure when we can launch it just yet. There's some little bits of bugs that we need to get rid of and sort out the finished detail. But look, it's, again, a new adventure and something a bit different, and you know, willing to try and hope it works. But you know, with business, I suppose you never quite know whether it's going to catch on. But you know, we're pretty excited about it, and I'm learning some new things every day with the business side of things. So
yeah,
hopefully, you know, in the not too distant future, it'll be out ready to go, and you guys can give it a nice plug later on. But yeah, FitApp.
I'm in.
You'll be all over it.
Not
that
I need it.
You love fitness.
I'm in. Yeah. Coming up, we'll get Gareth's thoughts on how all the sides are shaping up in this year's Guinness Six Nations 2020, and we'll go through some of your feedback on the team of the week, and also tell you a couple more jokes that you've left on our iTunes feedback.
Yeah, we get left jokes on our reviews on iTunes.
Oh, nice.
They're really bad, and every week, the Six Nations, we pick our team of the round, and of course, it's never right.
Yep.
And there are some people that say, I'd have picked them. Shanks is deliberately controversial.
He gets hammered every week because...
No, Shanks tries to get me.
Actually, I saw a tweet about this. Yes, there's
Tom Curry's in every single side that he picks.
He's in one side that I picked. Basically, Shanks tries to get me hammered. He goes, this is a joke. This is outrageous. He tries to get people to pick on me, but they don't really. But during the World Cup, basically, Shanks picked the World Cup 15 and didn't put Semi Randraja in it. And since then, he's tried to divert to me because the blokes are complete.
Who'd you have
joke.
In it ahead of him?
Who'd you have?
I can't remember what his name was now.
Owen Watkin, you put it ahead of him, did you? Were you laughing at Owen Watkin?
Because Radraga's a winger.
Right, much as I want to talk about England first, I'm in the company of two rabid Welshmen, so we better talk about the Welsh. Now, first of all, Wayne Pivac, okay? Some people, we've established on this podcast, that some people try and be clever and call him Wayne Pivac. And Pivac, and just call him Pivac.
Yeah, Wayne.
Yeah, but the surname bit.
It's a great name. It's a great name.
Vanya Pivac. Pivac. I'd say Pivac.
I knew it. Yeah, I knew it. You're another one. Are we getting it wrong?
Pivac. Does he have a nickname yet?
It is Croatian, isn't it? So you probably are right with the
Pivac. Vanya Pivac. Yeah.
Look, I went to school with his nephews, and they're a.
Oh, sweet. You're
Pivac.
Getting picked then. Happy days.
Well, yeah, I'm safe. So.
Happy days.
Captain, I'm going for.
He's in the bag, and he's got minimum 4-year cycling, and you've got 40 caps.
Non-contact as well. That's what you want.
Pardon?
Your non-contact bit.
Yeah, yeah, Kia driving that. Yeah. You don't need contact, do you?
Non-contract.
Does he have a nickname at all? No? Just Wayne? What does he call you? Because that's always a good sign.
Yeah, well, my nicknames sort of tend to stick now, so Chicken's sort of followed me over here, unfortunately. So
yeah,
he calls me Chicken too, so...
Why chicken?
Well, look, when I first played rugby officially in Auckland in the MPC ITM Cup, I would have been 75 kilos. And Benson Stanley, do you remember him, the midfielder?
Yeah.
My dad's got quite a renowned nickname back in New Zealand, and the boys really wanted to stick one on me, and they tried all sorts of crap and didn't stick. And they came up with Chicken for the chicken legs, and I nibbled quite hard at the start, and obviously as soon as you do that...
You pecked quite hard.
And as soon as you do that, you know, it's stuck, and it has. And I thought I got rid of it moving here, but when I moved to the Blues, Jared Hoyata, the lock, was already here. Yeah. And I actually didn't know Ho, but somehow he, you know, knew me as Chicken. And once the boys heard that, you know,
we always used to laugh at, it used to be funny, like sort of 10, 15 years ago when England were playing and all the nicknames they had, like Johnny, Jono, Lol.
Yeah, a lot of thought into that.
Greens.
Greens.
Yeah, Tins. Yeah. And then we looked at like the Welsh team.
Jason Robinson.
Robbo. We had like Melon.
Yeah.
Truckhead. Grub.
Yeah, Jughead and stuff.
That's just one bloke.
Yeah, Jughead, yeah.
What was yours?
Shanks. Lab Rat, I think they called him, didn't they? Wasn't it Lab Rat?
Ghost.
Silas, was it Silas?
Ace Maverick. No, Shanks, mate. It was easy.
We didn't put enough time into that. What have you made of the Welsh start to the Six Nations? Obviously, they hammered Italy to start.
Yeah, I think, obviously they'll be disappointed in probably the first half performance more than anything last week. I think, look, going to Ireland's always a tough place to win. Whether playing Italy first up really teed them up, I don't know. You know, I didn't think they really would have got much of the Italian game. I didn't think, you know, they.
I'm not
they
sure it's a great
easy.
Start to the campaign. No, Italy in the middle, I always think is.
Yeah. Well, I think enough. You know, in some ways, you know, with Wayne and Steve just getting there, it's a chance to run your systems without as much pressure,
yeah.
And they did that well. But then, when you're going into the cauldron of Test rugby and, you know, going to Dublin there when they're fired up, you know, it's a big step up in intensity for sure. And maybe that caught them a little bit. Obviously, with Byron, the boys are still buying into probably slight changes defensively. And that's going to take time to bed in.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of solid foundations there, I think. And, you know, I think we'll get a reaction. I think you'll see the boys bounce back next week. And, you know, they're a fighting bunch. And, you know, if they win next week, you know, there's still a chance in the Six Nations because, you know, I think every team's going to lose a game here in the Six Nations. I do anyway.
Yeah, possibly. Have you noticed a difference? Have you seen a clear difference in more so the way Wales want to attack since Wayne's come in? Because I've noticed there's a few more offloads. They seem to be playing a little bit wider.
It's probably hard to judge. I think, you know, the offloads, whether that's prescripted or it's just guys, you know, playing what they feel. What I've picked up is probably they're a bit more zonal with how they attack. I think we're seeing guys reload to space a little bit differently than probably under Gats and Howlers. You know, you've seen, I think, for Ellenwin's, Tomos scored.
Yeah.
I think you've seen Ellenwin off the lineup. He's just reloading rather than following the ball, and he's
so
the one
that's
not
ends all
up,
same way.
No, it's not.
Off.
So I think you'll probably see under Steve, not zonal, but guys going to be allowed to probably hold width a little bit differently than in the past, and that's probably the one thing I've picked up on. And
so not sort of playing the same way and trying to trying to just exhaust a space.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably the big difference. And, you know, you'll probably see a little bit more playing off 10. I think that's probably one thing I've picked up a little bit quicker as well. But, you know, it's going to take time for this stuff to bed in. You know, we've had Warren and the rest of the crew for, you know, 10 to 12 years. And it's going to take a little bit of a while for some habits to change and, you know, some new ideas to set in. So, look, although they'll be really disappointed with the Ireland performance, you know, I do think they could go ahead and win all the rest of their games. You know, they've got a couple of big games coming up. But, you know, if they get it right, I still think they're capable of, you know, getting some good results.
Have you had any contact with Wayne or Steve? Possibly not during the Six Nations, but prior to it.
I met with Wayne when I was renegotiating, when I was looking at a few ideas of what was ahead of me.
Trying to get a sponsored wheelbarrow to just...
Yeah. Look, I know Wayne, obviously, previously from back playing in Auckland with him. So I've met him then. And then I think just before the Bar Bars, I'd been rehabbing up at the Vale with the Welsh physios. So I'd bumped into Steve and Wayne a few times, and we just spoke about a few ideas and some of the ideas they had for the Barbarians and the way they want to play. And they talked to me a little bit about that. And that's been about it. Obviously, they're pretty busy now, but that's probably been my interaction at this point.
Do you text them well done after they win? You text the coaches?
Do you miss
well
me,
done, guys.
No, I haven't. But
just little gifts of biggest mistakes if Josh at all.
To be fair to him, he's been on fire, you know, for the last few months, so there hasn't been too many of them.
What have you made of France? We've spoken this a lot on the podcast. We had a sense that it was coming, it was going to click, and it looks like it is. Not the finished article yet, but they're looking more dangerous.
The beast has been awoken, really, hasn't it? I think, look, we've all known, you know, France on their day are tough to beat because they've got it all. You know, they've got size, they've got pace, they've got flair, they can do it all. And, you know, it's probably typical French how they played against Italy, really. You know, the game won, but gave away a ton of penalties, weren't very disciplined. And the week before that, you know, they put in a performance that probably not many of us had seen really coming. We knew they were capable of it, but, you know, obviously with Sean being there, I think he'll galvanise that group, and he's got the ability to make you want to defend for him. And I think if he can scare the French enough into that, you know, they're going to be tough to beat. So
yeah, you stopped them from smoking. Have you got, everyone's got a Sean Edwards story. Do you have any, anything you can share?
No, when I retire, I look forward to being able to tell it when I can retire, but there's no way I can share it right now.
There's a good chance he'd attack you.
Yeah, but look, I got a lot of respect for Sean. You know, he's been fantastic.
He's arrived in France, and it seems there is, while they're not perfect, there has been quite an immediate impact defensively. Yeah, like they look more organised. They look
hungry to tackle in a way, don't they?
They look hungrier to collide, actually. Yeah. And like he said in an interview I did with him post-match in Paris when they beat England a couple of weeks ago, he said they've always had that. They've always had this ability. I'm paraphrasing, I'm guessing at what, you can't remember quite what he said, but it was along the lines of the French lads have always wanted to smash people, basically. And I think to myself, it's not actually true. They have sometimes, and often they haven't really been so physical. So they looks like that, but I don't expect you to comment on this, but the Welsh defence hasn't looked top of the range so far. Didn't look brilliant against Ireland the whole way through. So I think in parts it did, but not often enough. You know, the Lama try, he's a wonderful player, but a couple of these tries just felt a bit soft for me.
Went through two players.
Yeah, it just felt a bit soft. And of course, that can happen to any team. Defensive systems, they're never that complicated because they can't, they can't be, can they? Because you've got to think about it. It's got to be instinctive. But just talk, if you could tell us a little bit about how it might take a bit of time to get used to a new defensive coach, because Wales do have to get used to a new coach, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's important with particularly defence. I think it's easy to get overcomplicated. And I think really, you know, defence is about attitude. And in the end, you know, defensively, it's about collisions and winning collisions. And usually the team or the individual who wants it more tends to come out on top. And I think when I think of my experiences with Sean, you know, he kept our defence really basic. It was really basic. It probably helped that he'd done it for 10 or 12 years in the group, but he kept things really simple, only a couple of key phrases or key work-ons once or twice a week, and he kept repeating his message over and over. And, you know, it probably took a little bit of time for that to adjust in Wales, and then the boys got used to it, and now it's, you know, how the boys are used to defending. And now under Byron, you know, there'll be some fresh ideas. And, you know, it takes time because I think we've had Sean for so long, and his D is, you know, pretty blitz orientated, you know, a lot of line speed. And I'm not saying that their new defence isn't. I still think you're seeing that with Wales. But if there are slight adjustments, you know, there's 12 years of boys doing the same thing under Sean. You know, you can't change it in 2 or 3 weeks. It's gonna take probably a season, you know, it really is, I think. And although, you know, people might get frustrated with that, you know, I think we've got to give them some slack and allow this to, I guess, improve the team, because they're only changing it because they think, you know, it can improve the team. And yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. But look, I'm certain the boys will be better for the performance on the weekend, and I think, you know, we will see a reaction, you know, next week.
It's also positive news that certain players are coming back. I think Owen Watkins should be fit. Not sure about Liam Williams. Hopefully Josh Adams is fit as well.
Yep.
I think it looked more precautionary, really, with his hip.
You'd hope so, yeah.
When he went off at the weekend.
What a player he's become, really, quickly, Josh Adams.
Oh, no. Unbelievable.
I know. Just his rise to fame, you know, sort of learning his trade at Worcester when he wasn't wanted by the Scarlets.
Yeah.
And he's just become a machine, you know what it's like, boys.
It's one of those things, it's easy to look at, you know, Scarlets who didn't want him and say, you idiots, you missed him. It's like, well, actually, sometimes stepping out of a new environment, and they may have established guys playing well.
Well, they did, yeah.
Yeah, so you got, so you move into a different environment, and actually you move somewhere where they're shorter wingers, and they say, well, you look quite talented. We haven't really got much choice. We'll put you in, and you're brilliant. You know, it's kind of, that can happen all the time.
But you think you're probably with him at the moment, you know, you go from no one knowing him, you know, 12 months ago, now you'd have to say, potentially, you know, Lions test winger, really, isn't he? That's where he's
up there.
He's got to be in that conversation now, isn't he?
I always get excited watching Johnny McNichol.
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
He really does.
He's a quality player. We've seen him twice so far in the Six Nations, start the first game, come off the bench for the second game. You've played against him a fair bit. Have you ever played with him?
No, I haven't. Nah. I didn't really know Johnny, really, until he moved over here. But I think that, you know, one of his greatest...
He offers something different, doesn't
he? Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of wingers are out-and-out finishers. Yep. You know, they finish really well, but they don't tend to give a pass, and they can stuff up 2v1s and stuff like that. But I think probably Johnny's attribute is he can set things up. You know, he gets involved in the middle of the field, and he gets second touches, and he can put boys away as well as finishing, you know. So he's become a real handy asset, you know, Welsh rugby, and, you know, he's looking pretty comfortable there.
He's very keen to be involved everywhere, isn't he? But with the added bonus that he's quick and can finish.
Yeah, exactly. So he's probably not as powerful as some of the other wingers, but, you know, he gets involved, which you need. And, you know, the Scarlets have used him really well in the middle of the park and at first receiver. And I think he'll add a nice balance to the Welsh game. And, he's certainly looking pretty comfortable there.
Lost Owen Williams as well with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's poor fella, only just back.
Yeah, nightmare, because, you know, he got himself back fit. He's playing well for Gloucester. Now won't feature. It'd be interesting to see who, if they bring anyone in for him. Anyway, Wales take on France next Saturday, 4:45 at the Principality Stadium, which is right behind me. You'll be able to watch all the bite-sized highlights in the breakdown on ITV Hub, which is the place to catch up with all the action throughout the 2020 Guinness Six Nations. Massive game at Twickenham next Sunday as England take on Ireland, which you can watch live on ITV. As we discussed, Ireland were very impressive against Wales, while England just about did enough to beat the Scots.
Battered
as Storm. Flats calls it Kiara, I call it Kira.
Kira.
Bitter teeth in Edinburgh. Difficult to read too much into that performance, though they rightly got a fair bit of stick post-Paris.
Well, you say rightly. Yeah, fair enough. It was quite interesting, that game up in Scotland. I really enjoyed it. Did you watch it on telly?
Yeah, it looked terrible. Yeah. I think, you know, any time you can see rain on TV, you know it's horrendous. Because usually when it's just little, you won't see it.
No. Yeah.
And you only know that from probably playing in it. But when you can see it, you know it's
the wide camera angles from up top. You can't see anything.
Yeah, because I think the light takes it out, doesn't it? Yeah.
When you get the close-up ones, it was just coming sideways. But you really enjoyed it, didn't you?
A lovely time. Absolutely lovely.
Did you wear that black jacket?
If you enjoyed that,
did you wear that black jacket?
Shiny. I did, actually, yeah. It's nice, isn't it?
Perfect.
Do you like it?
It's not my cup of tea.
Okay, no, sorry.
But if you want attention, you wear it.
I wish I had boring coats like you, mate.
Neville?
This sort of thing.
Do you know, when I got it, I didn't realise it looked like that. And then people gave me so much abuse for it when I took it out of the box at home.
Yeah.
I had the mates around and I was like, send it back, that is rank. I said, no. As soon as they told me to send it back, I kept it. Yeah, so I could have returned it.
Yeah, now you can't give it up now.
And now I've learned to love it. And the reason I love it is because everyone else hates it. It's like a dog that nobody wants to rescue.
Yeah, nice, I like it.
But the cracker, 13-6 in Scotland with no Finn Russell. Just be interested to hear your thoughts on the Finn Russell scenario. You know, do you think it's a situation where Scotland should do anything they can to get him back, or are they right to sort of hold their nerve and stick by what they believe?
From what we know.
Yeah, it's...
You have to speculate.
So yeah, it's tough. Look, I think there's...
What's he like to play against?
Yeah, well, obviously he's a talented individual. He certainly wins them games, or wins, you know, teams games. you know, he probably sometimes can make the odd mistake, but, you know, he's happy to run the risk. And he's
Lou
such
doesn't,
a.
Eh?
Yeah, well, he's.
Lou doesn't.
He's a talented individual, you know, there's no doubt about that. And he can. He's, you know, he's one great player. Yeah. It obviously seems like there's a bit more underneath the surface. I think talking to a few people, that sounds like it's been going on for a while. And it's tough to know. Look, you can understand why Grigor is in Scotland have sent him home, because I think ultimately, you know, as soon as he bends the leg for one play, probably loses a bit of respect amongst the group. And, you know, what happens if another guy does it? You know, and at the same time, you know, if you listen to Finn, you know, you're not allowed to have a beer, then, you know, you kind of just want to go against that, don't you? So it's, God, I don't know, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
I do think for the best thing for Scottish rugby, that they've got to resolve it, don't they? Because he has to be involved, really.
It's like Adam Hastings is a really gifted young bloke.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't only want one guy, you want both of them. And unquestionably, Scotland are an easier squad to face when he's not there. So they are stronger when he's there. That's beyond question, isn't
it? That's fact, mate. That's
that is
fact.
What I call fact.
Yeah, well, I think with you know, when you play Scotland and when Finn Russell's at 10, you're sort of defensively, you always got to know you got to be on your toes because, you know, the way they play too, they encourage, you know, just to take, you know, a few risks and to expect the unexpected, really.
He'll nutmeg you, won't
he? Yeah, he'll try to do anything, mate. So
I wonder if that was deliberate. Either way, it's humiliating, but I wonder if that was deliberate.
When you when we're talking about relationships, you know, you're talking about Finn Russell, Grigor Townsend.
You and me.
And I.
Friends.
How was your relationship with someone like Gethin Jenkins when you first came over? Because, you know, he's one of those that takes you sort of 10 years to get to know him. And then when those 10 years are up, you think, oh, God, I wish I didn't know him.
I wish I'm bothered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, look, you know, he was probably the most senior player in Welsh rugby and the Blues when he came
over. Yeah. Well, look, when I came over, I was aware of him. I probably wasn't aware of how big his
head is.
Yeah. His cult status was. You know, like, he deserves, you know, he's so well respected and he's achieved a lot in the game. But
it was that try against Ireland. Remember, do you remember?
Yeah. The charge down.
Do you know how he charged that down?
His head.
I lost the ball.
Oh, was it?
So
you set it up.
I got it stripped. Yeah.
So you actually
set the try. Yeah. Never ever thanked me. But
who's Peter Stringer nicked it off you? Who nicked it off you? Stringer.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
So, like, when I first came over, probably, I think with Melon, you know, you got to earn his respect. And probably coming over at the start, I remember I played London Irish. We played them back-to-back in Europe in the Challenge Cup. And back-to-back weeks, the first week, I got charged down by a prop at Elms Park, and he scored, literally ran like 25 metres. And the following week, I tried a cross kick, and was it Shane Geraghty?
Yeah.
He charged me down and went 40 metres. And I remember that game at the Majeski, being under the sticks, and Mallon comes, you know, they're all trotting back, and he's just, like, piercing, looking at me, which was, you know, fair enough, but that was probably my first, but, like, God, he's pretty intense, you know. But, look, I've grown to really enjoy playing with Mallon. We've had a fair few arguments on the field, which I've actually always quite enjoyed. I laughed at a few times and called him out, and he's called me out, and, you know, we've left it on the field. But
you grow to tolerate him, don't you?
Yeah, he is entertaining with how he can sap. You know, he was.
Yeah.
If he's grumpy one day, he just wants to moan about this and moan about that, and that was always actually quite entertaining.
You need a bit of that.
Yeah, you do. Especially
that much, sometimes series, that much negativity can be positive.
Well, but then, it was, and I think when we were at the, like, Blues his last couple of years, we were such a young squad, you know, he became a bit of the old dad that would tell the academy boys off for not cleaning up, and he literally made the academy boys one week clean up the urinals because they kept leaving gum. We don't know who did it, but he made the Kevin boys pick them up each week.
Whenever he's down, all you got to do, right, is give him a flat screen TV, you give him a PlayStation on Xbox, you give him a Bluetooth headset, and he's away, mate.
Well, mate, since he's had his kid, since he's had his kid, though, I don't think he's on as much. We used to play quite a bit, but yeah, he hasn't been. I don't think he's been on as much now that he's, you know, fatherhood and all that.
So, back on topic, please.
Yeah, what, really?
England against Ireland at Twickenham.
England,
still no number 8.
Championship decider, we all agree. Yeah, I think, still no number 8. It is an odd, an odd one, that, but you've got so many quality players in the England squad, you feel like they'll beat Scotland.
If you think England are trying to turn Tom Curry into an 8, which they are, Sale surely have to do the same then.
They don't have to do the same, and they won't do the same. So Steve Diamond at Sale said he ain't playing 8 here. Yeah, but, you know, I sort of think if you are a coach, you know, you and I know, and you might agree, Gareth, you might not care because it's over in England, but there are a few number 8s in England at the moment. Alex Donbrandt in particular, Sam Simmons at Chiefs, Tim Ina-Harrison at Northampton. They're tearing it up at the moment. They're in really, really good form.
Even Hughes has gone all right, isn't he?
Nathan Hughes has gone really well at Bristol, yeah. So there are some guys playing really, really well. And Eddie Jones hasn't picked a recognised number eight in the Six Nations. He's put Tom Curry back there. It's an interesting one. You and I are of the opinion, I know we're of the same opinion, that if you've got these guys, specialists, playing really well, pick one of them and stick them in the right position instead of playing someone out of position.
It's like you're playing a certain position for your club. You know, you should be playing for your country in that position, really.
Yes, I mean, Steve Diamond said if you got one of the top two players in the world in one position, why play them in a different position? I agree with that point. Equally, were you a rugby coach, England coach, Wales coach, whatever, you would have players that, not your favourites, but actually your favourites, guys you thought, this guy has to be in my team. And if you got so many of those that the person who gets squeezed out is a rookie who hasn't played for England, has only played once or twice and hasn't been on the scene for a long time, that person is going to miss out over one of the guys you feel has to be in there. So we would all have favourites. We wouldn't all be completely objective. You can't only pick on form. You also have to pick who's got credit in the bank, pick the guys you know and trust, because England, I think, after the World Cup, bizarrely having got to the final and lost, I felt like, and I could be wrong here, England having got to the final and lost, they're under a lot of pressure in this Six Nations to perform. I think maybe it feels like they're under more pressure than the Welsh. I don't know, because the Welsh have got this new management team coming in and they kind of slipped under the radar and
without a doubt, there's
played in the playoff on the Friday night before the final. Wales had a great World Cup, but...
But with the funding you've got and the teams you get to pick from, you should win every tournament there is.
Yeah, which is why we're very likely to win it. I say we, I'm not playing. But England Ireland's a biggie and you've seen them both play now. So in terms of where it's going to be won or lost, did you watch Ireland play against Wales and think this team's going to take some beating? Because you can't have taken a lot of out of the... Scotland-England game because nothing happened.
Look, I think England will win purely because it's at Twickenham and I think there's a little bit of more pressure on them to win it than Ireland to win it. Look, I think it'll be close. I don't think there's much and I just feel like at Twickenham, England will get the job done because they have to. You know, if they don't win that, they're in a different circumstance maybe than where Ireland are. I do think with watching England play, it's now they've lost Tuolungi in injury. I think Marco's coming back. You've seen from the World Cup where they've had such big men, get them across the game line and get them go forward. I do feel that they've not looked blunt, but they haven't. They've lost a few battering rams, which is why I was quite interested that they kept Curry at eight. I would have expected them to just look for some size, just to get them some go forward, because it seems to be, you know, that their starters particularly, they're pretty well set with who gets them go forward, who's coming around the corner, you know, one, two and three, and suddenly, you know, they're 20 minutes down the line. But I just felt they've sort of lacked a little bit of that. But in saying that, you know, I still think they're going to beat Ireland somehow. So
it's hard to judge this game coming up because we didn't see hardly anything from England. I think if you look at Ireland, the combinations are probably a little bit more settled in the way that they're playing over the first two games. I thought Henshaw was really good against Wales. His partnership with Bundiaki is good. You got Sexton and Murray. It's not to say England don't have partnerships, but they just, I think as a unit, they look a little bit more sharper behind the scrum. But that's because we hardly saw anything against Scotland with Jonathan Joseph and Farrell and Ford, you know, those three combinations. So I think it's going to be a power game. I think whoever's going to be able to carry the strongest, get themselves over the ground, like we saw with Ireland from the start against Wales.
Yep.
Just their back row, with their front row, the power they had and the carries just got them on the front foot a little bit more. And that's what narrowed Wales' defence, is because they're constantly backpedalling. So they weren't allowed to blitz, really, because it's difficult to blitz when you're going backwards. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be super tight. I hope it is.
Yeah, so do I.
And when it does get really tight like that, sometimes home advantage
is
the difference.
You're probably right. I'd probably say that's a fair assessment.
That, you know, you just don't know. I mean,
wait for Wales, mate. You know,
they still talk about me.
came through Shanklin's gates earlier.
Where do you think it's going to be one lost?
Scrum,
let me guess.
No, not really.
No, not really. No.
I think the line-out will be really important because there's just more of them. And
yep.
I think with Devon Toner coming off the bench, they have an option that he does more than just win line-out, Devon Toner, I think. But he's very good the last 20 minutes of a game, securing really, really important ball. He's also good at, you know, hustling on opposition ball. England's line-out has to be right. I think, you look back to the World Cup, the semi-final against New Zealand, their line-out was just incredible. They just took New Zealand apart. Mm. When New Zealand had four jumpers against England, sort of two and a half, the final went the other way. South Africa really dominated there. So The line-out has to be right. The breakdown, I just can't see. If England go with the same back row, I just can't see England struggling at the breakdown when you've got Curry, Underhill in the field and Ludlam as well.
But look at Ireland's back row as well, though.
I know, but it's pretty hard to imagine Ireland's, you know, back row being overcome. That's my point. But I can't see England's being dominated either. I think they're too good. Courtney Laws may play because of the line-out option, which perhaps takes away a little bit from the breakdown. But either way, I think that's always a key battle, but that'd be a fascinating one to watch. I kind of want, when England are flowing nicely and George Ford is at 10, I think England threaten a lot, and they can threaten a lot of different ways, and George is a threat on his own. I kind of want to see a bit more from Ireland. For the Sexton try where Kian Healy pulled the ball back against Wales, that was a lovely bit of play off slow ball. I kind of want to see a bit more from Ireland at Twickenham and see them. It's easy to say having a crack, because they always have a crack anyway, but I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of invention off slow ball and something other than massive units running into massive units, because I think England can just deal with that.
They will have a crack, though, especially with Conway on the wing, especially with Lahmer at 15, probably more so counter-attack.
Yeah.
I think probably maybe where England are a little bit more settled, more so than the other teams, is the fact that, you know, that their coaching group, you know, Eddie runs a show there. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts behind him, but I think the way they've played hasn't really changed, whereas I think probably Ireland and Wales, more so even France, still trying to learn some subtle changes to the game. And I think, although Farrell coached, part of the setup at Ireland, I think with Mike Catt coming in there, their game's still growing. So I wonder if that might still take a little bit of while to win these big games. You know, when they won the Six Nations a couple of years ago, they were firing under Joe and they knew their game inside out. And, you know, I wonder if maybe there's still elements of their game that they're still trying to perfect. Because, you know, the week before, you know, I thought Scotland, you know, did enough to win that game, you know, at the Viva. So,
well, they did. Shanks cursed Hoggy. Anyway, England host Ireland at Twickenham next Sunday at 3 p.m. It's going to be a large one, and you can watch it all live and exclusive on ITV, of course. Scotland head to Rome 0-2 in search of a much-needed victory, with the Finn Russell affair still casting a long shadow over the squad. Gregor Townsend has described the interview with Finn in the Sunday Times as disappointing, but has generally been dignified in his response. Whatever the rights and wrongs, you can't help thinking the whole sorry saga is blowing holes in their tournament. So Gregor Townsend said it was disappointing of the timing, he had issues with it. He was hoping to sit down and have a further conversation with him. We've kind of gone through this, but, you know, I think Gregor Townsend was anticipating a conversation with Finn Russell, and then a big article came out in the newspaper. Great journalism, by the way. Very much enjoyed reading it, didn't we, on our 9:38-hour cab ride home from Edinburgh the other night, back to Bath. Disappointed he's not coaching Finn. He likes coaching him. He's coached him since he was an academy player, or he's enjoyed watching him evolve since he was an academy player.
Clever. Take the moral high ground. That's what I say.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's an interesting one. But given the turmoil,
maybe he means it, which I'm pretty sure he does.
Yeah, but you're incredibly cynical. I'm not. Given the turmoil, are they in danger of getting turned over in Rome? Because you think, Gareth, if you're Italy, there's no better time to play Scotland than at home when they've got all this stuff kicking off and they're under tons. Gregor Townsend, make no mistake, is under big pressure to win now.
It's the wooden spoon game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard an interview from Gregor after the English game, and it's almost like it's all about how their mindset is, really. And I think going off theirs and his is you know, his message was, you know, not many teams go to Aviva and beat Ireland, which is fair enough. And, you know, England World Cup finalists, you know, we just lost to them. So I think in his mind, you know, they feel like they're tracking all right. So if you go to Italy thinking that, they think they're not far from getting it all right, then, you know, they probably think they're going to be okay. I think they'll win. I don't think I've seen enough from Italy.
Although, they're pretty ordinary against Wales. You know, they lost the ball loads of times in contact, spilled it. I thought they were far better against France. They stopped France from playing a bit. You know, you say France are quite poor, maybe Italy stopped them a little bit, but there were some good performances. They're playing Tommaso Allan at 12. They're playing Canner at 10. They're playing Canner at 12. Yep. So that sort of tells you how they want to play. You know, they don't want to be a crash-bang 10-man sort of rugby team what we're used to seeing them. They want to play more expansive. And Menotti was brilliant.
He looked good on the wing, didn't he?
Jaden Hayward, they looked better with him at 15.
I think it'll come down to the last 30. You know, yeah. If Sergio's coming off the bench and they're in the game.
Oh, yeah, yes. Of course. It's the big day.
That's going to be the one that probably galvanises them. You know, they're obviously very emotional. And
Castro's coming back as well. Andrea Massi's playing.
So, you know,
Troncon is coming on at 9.
If they don't start well,
Dominguez 10.
Yeah, you know, yeah. They don't start well. That crowd gets involved. They cry when Sergio comes and they get fired up.
Yeah.
You know, it is a tough place to. They've got an ability to. I'm not going to say bring you down, but they're not.
Yeah,
they play to stop you. You know, yeah. And they know they play to stop you and come. You know, they get some rewards out of that.
If Pelledri, you know, gets his go,
yeah,
forward,
exactly.
And he's such a tough man to stop.
He is just. I love watching Jake Pelledri.
He's a pinball, yeah. Isn't he?
He's just. It's painful. It's painful. Like watching him, watching people try and defend him. You get a good. He's got a bit of footwork. He's also really quick, but you get a good shot on him.
Yep.
And it's not enough.
Rides it.
It's just not enough.
Yeah.
It's like when a lioness grabs a wildebeest, you think that's a big impact, that. But the wildebeest actually, you've got to hang on and hang on and hang on, and eventually it might come down. But he's a freak.
You've been watching Attenborough again, have you?
So I get to sleep. Yeah. That or John Virgo.
Yeah. I still think Rory Hutchinson should start at 13. Said it from the start.
Ahead of Hugh Jones.
Again, you can't take too much on the weekend's game against England because no team really showed anything. But I just think he offers a point of difference that potentially would suit Scotland, playing so well for his club. More of a creative 13 than a strike runner like Hugh Jones. But there was opportunities against Ireland, which a lot of the Scottish players in key positions didn't take.
So in short, we've covered the Finn Russell. In short, we think it could be a hard afternoon's work if they don't start well, but we back Scotland to do it.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah,
I think
we
do. Italy play Scotland in Rome next Saturday at 2:15, a game you can watch live and exclusive on ITV.
Obviously, there's no team of the round this week. We've had plenty of constructive feedback on our last selection, haven't we, Tommy?
Look,
he's deliberately controversial and he gets hammered.
You get hammered more than me. You're like the Katie Hopkins of rugby. You're worse than Andy Goode, right? You get hammered way more on the forwards that are not selected. I don't get hammered as much on the backs. I don't go safe either. I just go...
Yes, you do.
I go with four.
You do.
You're biased.
You are... In many, many ways, similar to Boris Johnson. Whichever way you lean politically, it's difficult to deny that he's someone who changes what he truly believes with the wind. And I think you do that just to make sure you don't get abused on Twitter.
Look at your comment there.
So good on you. I'm right. So yeah. Phil A said this. This is what you get, right?
Yeah. From the Panthers.
This is Phil A. Yeah. So
all of Boris Johnson's
what I always quite like is I see... You know, team of the week, and it's a load of rubbish, isn't it? Because it's just our guess, but it's fun, and but lots of people don't find it fun. They are upset that you have picked certain players.
If we pick a player on a losing team, like how can you pick him?
Okay,
yeah. So it's like Itoji was the best lock by some distance. We didn't pick.
I agree. You didn't pick him. I
thought he was better than Alan Wynn.
Who was the other lock?
Alan Wynn's just behind
who was
me.
The
now.
Other lock you picked?
Dean Budd.
Yeah, better than Dean Budd.
No, you didn't.
He was on a winning team.
You said Dean Budd was awesome.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
You pick him.
I watched it with you. You said Buddy. Buddy, you kept shouting. Buddy, Buddy. You did exactly what you kept shouting. See, Joe Sheridan said this. I'd be tempted to have Willemse in the second row. You see, that's a nice comment. I think there's merit in that because I thought Willemse was great.
Rugby
he was banging
inside
and clanging.
Line have said Aki over Parks. I picked Hadley at 12. Mm-hmm. Thought he had a really good game. Apart from one kick that went out on the full.
Thought Bundy Aki.
Left-footed option.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I thought he was really
dropped
strong.
Dropped the ball
defense.
Over the line. But Aki.
He dropped the ball. That's a long reach, that is. Yeah. It's not an easy try to score that.
I thought they were going to give it. I really thought they were
I'm also not sure you can call that a mistake. Can you?
No.
You probably can, can't you? Not quite an
error. It was a great line, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a wicked line, yeah.
Yeah, it was a brilliant line.
It's a positive action.
I like watching him play because he's like... When you call someone no-nonsense and solid, that sounds like an insult when you're in the midfield.
Yeah.
But he runs great lines. I think he just does... What he does really well is he does the fundamentals of playing 12 really, really well, repeatedly.
Low
and doesn't
error
get
count.
Bored doing
really
it.
Really low error count. Yeah. Actually, he's got a turn of speed as well, which we saw in last year's Six Nations, also in the World Cup. But yeah, love watching him play.
Bundy Aki, I thought was great.
And I went for Sexton over Entomac. Now, Entomac was in, and then he just dropped... and up and under with no pressure. I was like, oh, but...
You weren't having that, were you?
He missed just, a fair few kicks too, didn't he?
Yeah, but I also think the size of the game makes a difference as well.
Yep, fair.
Andy Bell says Tipperick over Underhill, but agree with the rest. That's a good shout.
Flats loves Underhill.
Yeah, do you know, I like...
Because he's from Bath.
Tipperick's one of my absolute favourites.
I thought Tips... Because Tips got man of the match in the first game, didn't he?
Yeah, we don't want to overdo it, do we?
I thought he was 10 times better last week than against Italy.
I'm with you, mate.
So, it's a funny one.
He doesn't play at Bath.
You said he was average.
He doesn't play at Bath.
You said he was average.
Gav James.
But Underhill. Underhill, like, we're watching the game. This game, the Scotland game, was so terrible. And it was so awful. And every now and again, you see a Scottish fella carrying the ball and just sort of ducking back in, looking for options or coming through traffic. And you see him get absolutely nailed 2 or 3 yards backwards and skid in on his back again. Then someone else carries a ball in and gets absolutely nailed. And it's not like high tackle count, bit of disruptiveness, being a bit of a nose at the ruck. This bloke is terminating people. And I watched him and I was like, I would love to play on the same team as him. I would love to play with Underhill because he just monsters people. He seems to be like, I don't know, maybe it's in like his, I don't know, upper body or in the top third or something. He is just stronger than everyone else. And what's normal tackle for someone else, a stopper, he just knocks people backwards.
Yeah, he was pretty... I mean, him and Carey were pretty impressive during the World Cup, weren't they? Mm. The amount of times they smoke some big boys, you know, and they're not big men either, but, you know, obviously they've got to be pretty powerful, surely.
Yeah, Gav James has also put, no Tipperick, behave, you silly sausage.
Don't you call me a sausage, Gav.
That's a flat, wasn't it?
Mark Bettis and small man Peaky both say, Pledry at six, flats... Put number 8 CJ Stander in.
I put you couldn't leave CJ Stander out.
They're all against flats.
Yeah,
I've had one.
Well done, Vanilla Tom. But you can't Stander at 8. Stander had to be in there. Had to put him in somewhere.
Man of the match.
And I don't want to sound arrogant when I say this, but it's my team and I'll put him wherever I want. So he's in there. I love Jake Pledry, as I've said 10 minutes ago. But on that day, I could not leave Stander out of there. Couldn't.
So who'd you pick at 8?
Who'd I pick at 8?
Delalio.
6. No, I picked a. Did I pick Aldrit? Who did I pick at 8?
Yeah, you picked Aldrit. Yeah.
Our kid Aldrit, was it?
Yeah, I think so. Buzz Aldrit.
Who else could it have been?
Scotland.
Aldrit, Scotland, no one from that game.
Must have been, yeah.
Must have been Buzz Aldrit.
Yep.
Ian Lachlan, here's another one. Same number of Italians as English. Come on.
I went Minossi, you see, on the wing. Weren't many great wing performances.
What's the same number of Italians as English got to do with it, Ian? Let me answer that question with a question. What's that got to do with it? Chris Primrose, wrong. Twice as many Italians. Cheers, Chris. We're definitely right. Right, before we go, time for a couple of hilarious gags. We're asking you to leave us a gag on iTunes when you review us. We'll read out the best and the worst. The standard has been poor so far, but it's difficult because we can't read any jokes out that are offensive to anyone on planet Earth or any surrounding planets or their friends or their pets. And also, it can't have any swear words in it. So,
well, I've got a risque one.
Have you?
Yeah. JB, did you hear what happened to the blind circumciser?
No.
He got the sack.
That's good.
It's probably the rudest one we've had.
Rhys Morgan, I asked Siri, Siri, is it going to be stormy tomorrow? Siri said, yes, it is, and stopped calling me Shirley. Right. I realised my phone was in airplane. Rhys.
Yeah. Guff. Walked into a fish and chip shop the other day with a haddock under my arm. Do you do fish cakes? I asked. Man behind the counter said, no. It's a pity. It's his birthday.
JTM, what do you call a judge with no thumbs? Justice fingers. Cheers, JTM.
Okay, is that it? We got another review.
That's enough, isn't it? I put an end to it.
Okay, yeah, enough. That's all from us. Thank you to Gareth for joining us. We'll put the clips up on the show. You can view them at ITV Rugby, at David Flatman, at Tom Shanklin. I'm sure Gareth feels weird calling you Gareth, that you will retweet them. Share with all your mates. We'll be back next week with a review of all the action in round 3.
Thank you, Gareth Anscombe. Thank you.
Thank you.
At Gareth_Anscombe. Good luck.
Thank you.